Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, I'm Paco Romain.
And I'm George Chen, and you're listening to SubDoc. This is a show where we talk to people from the world of comedy, music, TV, and film about documentaries.
Today, we chat with comedian Alan Strickland Williams. You may have seen Alan on Conan, and he was recently singled out by Comedy Central as a comic to watch. Alan wanted to talk to us about the 2015 doc Best of Enemies, where ideological opposites William F. Buckley Jr. and Gore Vidal hold a series of riveting, nationally televised debates that usher in a new era of public discourse and pundit TV. You can see Best of Enemies on Netflix. So now, our talk with Alan.
All right. Well, I'm going to roll, even though there is a man with a blowing leaf blower.
There's a man blowing out front.
The blowing
it
man.
It is L.A.
And there, in the bushes, there's a man blowing. And we have our air conditioner going because it's real hot today. But thanks for trekking all the way over here. It's Alan Strickland Williams.
Hey, everybody. Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. It's first time on the show.
Yeah.
And you like documentaries?
You know what's funny is that I actually really don't.
Thank you for coming on.
That was Alan Strickland.
When you sent me the email and like you send all the options and what people have done and everything, and I was like, oh, this. I don't watch documentaries. I'm not gonna like. I don't know what to do. I'm not gonna do it. And then I remembered that one of my favorite movies is this documentary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh, that is a documentary.
Yeah.
Most documentaries to me are like. I don't know. There's a lot of them are always so tilted, even if it's in the way of an opinion I enjoy, that I'm kind of like, I would rather read or whatever. I like when I watch something, I kind of want it to be funny or entertaining or have an arc or something. It's like, I don't need to watch homework, you know? But, you know, obviously there's some subjects that are so fascinating or whatever.
So you're a big reader then?
I do read a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't see the documentary, but I read the book.
We were talking about having guests on our podcast. We're like, it's kind of like, we kind of give people homework.
It is homework. Yeah. And it's funny. I just did a homework comedy show. I did that Arguments and Grievances show.
Oh, that's a great show.
What was
your topic?
Me and James Fritz did arguing versus not arguing, and I did not arguing.
Of course, James did arguing.
James did arguing. But it was one of those things, too, where I was like, you sent me the email right after I had, like, gotten the email for that, and I was just like, why am I getting all this fucking homework?
Yeah.
I didn't get a comedy for the homework.
but once I realized, I was like, oh, wait a second, Best of Enemies isn't on this list of things that have been done.
And you love it.
And I love it. And I was like, I could talk about that.
Yeah,
so,
that's awesome. Yeah. Have you read William F. Buckley's
I read writings? A biography of William F. Buckley. I actually just finished it. Jeff Wadenhofer gave me the book. I think
y'all are
called
smart
Buckley.
Guys. Y'all are smart reading
Well,
guys.
We like to read. We're like kind of both fascinated with like that era of politics. And he lent me another great book, which kind of fits into the documentary world, this book called What It Takes, or maybe it's called Whatever It Takes. I should maybe know the titles of these things. By a guy named, Ben Kramer. All about 1988. It's about the entire, the Republican primaries, the Democratic primaries. The only thing is he doesn't really touch on Jesse Jackson, but he follows like whoever, Dukakis, Gephardt, Gary Hart,
Bush, Gary Hart.
Dole.
Yeah, monkey business.
And then was there another Republican besides Bush and Dole? It might have just been them.
I vaguely remember. I mean, Gephardt. I haven't heard that name.
Gephardt was Democrat.
Time.
Didn't Buchanan tip his toe?
Buchanan did a little bit, but I don't think he really touched on it. But anyway, it's like it's a fucking like 800. It's like a tome.
Oh, wow.
Of a book, but it's so fascinating. Actually, to the point where I keep thinking about like I think that there's a good movie in there. Like, mm-hmm. just because it's like the different profiles and,
right.
you know, Bush is like the, even Bush Sr. was a fucking idiot, like yeah. dipshit.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. and he was just a little bit more like patrician than mm-hmm. his right. son. But the way that they characterize him is as like, a guy that doesn't really know how to talk to people and
right.
yeah. kind of out of
spectrum-y,
touch. Well, he just sends a lot of thank you cards. Like that was his big thing. Was he's always writing thank you cards to people.
Yeah. Vomiting in people's laps.
And yeah, of course.
Well, he also didn't know the price of a gallon of milk.
He didn't know that. Yeah. So
it's interesting that you and Jeff, because you guys are a little younger, I think, than us. So 88, is that even in your direct memory?
I mean, I was born in 86.
Okay,
so
that's not even really.
So yeah, I just find it as like that's a real... And, you know, and we'll talk about this with the in terms mm-hmm. of Best of Enemies, too. But it's like, wow, how everything, as everything changes, the more it stays the same or whatever it mm-hmm. is. It's like, if you reading that, it's like, oh, it's the same fucking shit. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, around that same time after Reagan, like with Bush and everything, it's
right.
just, it was culture wars and it was,
yeah.
you know,
well, you still
we're
have
still doing it.
You
yeah.
still have Roger Stone. You still have Lee Atwater.
Sure,
you
yeah.
have the archetypes of the... The
well, Atwater's dead, but he lives mm-hmm. on in like yeah. Roger Stone and
yeah. Have whatever. You seen that documentary about Lee Atwater?
That Boogeyman.
Yeah,
I was actually thinking of.
It's awesome.
Did you
the Get Me Roger Stone or is there
no that, Boogeyman?
That's the
I don't know Boogeyman. Which one's
Boogeyman's
Boogeyman?
Great.
But well, this is the Lee Atwater.
Lee Atwater.
That
documentary.
Was the other one I was gonna uh-huh. think about doing, but then I don't think
Paco
it's streaming it. Anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it's on YouTube.
It's on YouTube. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because so, I was like, I didn't see it on Netflix. So I was like, well. But yeah, that's, I mean, he's a fascinating, and a lot of those Republican guys are interesting because they're, I find them truly fascinating, abhorrent, but fascinating. And,
yeah.
and as whatever you want to say about a consultant or a campaign manager or whatever, I don't think, I always think it's interesting. Obviously, Lee Atwater did a lot of race baiting, like he came mm-hmm. out and admitted it, but he was trying to do his job of winning an election for a bad person, sure, but that's what he's trying to do. And that was his job, and he was good at his job, and that's why it's fascinating me because I never, like, when I look at, like, something, like, and then in that book, too, the Willie Horton ad for Bush.
The Willie Horton ad, yeah.
I don't look at that as necessary. I mean, obviously, it's a manipulative, race-baiting tactic, but... I put the blame on the people that vote for that and respond to that as opposed to the guy that came up with the idea to do it because it's, he's really, I mean, yeah, you could maybe do another job or whatever, but mm-hmm. I do find, and the reason why I find it fascinating isn't because I respect it, but, or isn't because I endorse it, but because it's so wholesale affects change in such a huge way because these guys are getting fucking presidents elected or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So women too. Yeah, I don't know. So it's kind of like a sick fascination. It's like the car wreck that is America. Like yeah. like you can't look away. And I think yeah. Best of Enemies has that. Mm-hmm. It's like you're watching us lose control of the wheel. Mm-hmm. Like we mm-hmm. think we're driving and then it's like this is going to get yeah. out of hand. So.
And you grew up in Florida, right?
Yeah, I grew up right outside Jackson, this town called Orange Park. And I was born in Texas, moved. But grew up mainly in Northeast mm-hmm. Florida.
So your family is more...
My family is pretty conservative. Mm-hmm. It's basically me and my sister, my uncle, and my grandmother on my dad's side are all the Democrats. Mm-hmm. I'm probably the most actually out there liberal one. Mm-hmm. And then everyone else is Republican. And I think a lot of them are... kind of don't think about it Republicans where they just kind of they're going to vote Republican no matter what even if they don't like Trump and mm-hmm. think he's an idiot which is just so crazy. I mean it's just so ridiculous but yeah.
Yeah, and so you've always did you study politics in school? Or
no, not really. I actually was pretty apolitical until later in life. I didn't really care in high school at all. I didn't want anything to do with that stuff.
Yeah.
I pretty much thought it was just all bullshit just because, and when I was in sixth grade was when 2000 happened, the election with the hanging chads and all
yeah.
this stuff. And so I was just
I
like,
remember that.
Florida is a fucking laughingstock. We
yeah.
ruined the country.
Oh, yeah.
And it just turned me off in such a big way that I didn't care about, I didn't follow politics at all until Obama came along.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, okay. And
was
then,
that your first election? in 2008?
No, my first one was 04, but I didn't vote.
Oh, okay.
I didn't vote. I also didn't like John Kerry. Mm-hmm. So I was like Bush is going to win again. So I just didn't care.
God, we could have had John Edwards in office. That would have been horrible as well.
I mean, maybe he's kind of a populist, like
he's
fucked a hairdresser or whatever, and he's like an ambulance chaser. But again, he like tried to do something. I don't know. That's the type of stuff too, where I'm like, there's a lot of stuff. A lot of it with Trump too. It's like, you know, we're meandering, but it's like, you know, a lot like affairs, stuff like that. The fact that you've been married 3 times and divorced and like marry a younger woman. Mm-hmm. I don't really care about that. That doesn't really matter. But I do think like the way you talk about it matters. Mm-hmm. And he clearly talks like he's clearly just like so tacky and like awful about it that it's like, well, at least be like, a little classy.
Like the way Tiffany Trump is like the saddest case.
I think.
Like just like when Father's Day came, I'm like, well, this is probably the worst father-daughter relationship I can think of.
What's up with her?
She doesn't seem to like him too much.
She came to the inauguration. She came to some of the conventions. You know, Marla, I think, was paid to stay away or something. There's some like really bad stuff with Marla. It's just like clearly like, he only cares about one of his kids. That's literally all it is.
He loves Ivanka.
He only loves the one.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even think he cares about Barron, to be honest. I mean, like, by the time you're on your third wife, and like, he's probably just like, I'm over it.
Yeah.
I'm not ever actually raising these children anyway.
Right. So you were never like a student body government kind of guy.
Well, I guess I did do youth and government in high school, which is like you write a bill and get it passed. But it was very apolitical. I think the thing I worked on was something to do with the education system, and not even like funding or anything. So yeah, I don't know. I pretty much didn't care. And then I went to college, and it was pretty like politically charged, and that kind of turned me off too.
Where'd you go?
Cornell.
Yeah.
And so like, but it also is strange too, because it's like this Ivy League like Northeast school, but they had like 3 different factions of Republican. College Republicans on campus. They had like they had 3 different conservative newspapers.
Whoa.
And I just thought I was like, because I guess apparently it's a hotbed. There's some professor that's been there for a while, and maybe it's still there actually, who is kind of like a leader of the sort of neoconservative movement. Mm. Like Wolfowitz went to Cornell like back in the day.
Paul.
The Cornell Wolfowitz
of the Cornell
Ithaca?
Whatever.
Is that Ithaca?
Ithaca, New York. Yeah. And so
also known for its hardcore straight edge scene. That's like the only other thing I think that people know
and,
from Ithaca.
There's a Ultimate Frisbee. There's
Cornell also has like a hotel school.
They got a good hotel school. And also there's this restaurant called Moosewood, which was the first vegetarian restaurant in the country.
Oh yeah, the Moosewood Cookbook.
It's pretty good. Mm-hmm. And it's gorgeous. There's, you know, plenty of...
especially from a kid from Florida.
It was kind of crazy. It was so cold, you know, in the winter. But it was really pretty.
What was your major, or what did you study?
Well, I went there for bio, pre-med, and then got a little turned around. And
you were a science guy.
I went out. I got out with an interdisciplinary studies degree.
Awesome. Yeah, that's the way to go.
That is the way to go. Did you do stand-up there?
No, I did sketch.
Oh, nice.
I was in a sketch group.
Okay.
What's the name?
Oh, God. Schizophrenics. And I hated it. I hated it so much.
Exclusive drop here.
They finally changed it like 2 years ago. I hate it so much. They're so bad. I remember the only one. There's only one that I thought was worse than ours.
Women?
It was Marist. Marist College was the Hugh Marists.
Oh.
And then some other one. There's some really bad ones. I mean, no one has a good one, but like.
No.
Yeah.
That's why I asked, because they're always bad.
Schizophrenics is just so bad.
I guess Women is the best sketch comedy name.
Yeah, Women's a good name. Women's not bad. But yeah, that was kind of like my intro to that. But yeah, it was so, like, people were so political on both sides and yelling at you on the quad and stuff. Mm. And I'm just like, ugh, I hate this. And then once, I guess a part of it, what I think also did kind of practically do it for me too was, I graduated in 2008, which is like, I think the worst time to graduate since like the Great Depression or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's no jobs and there's nothing. And like, I mean, I got some short-term work after graduation, but you know, you see that the country's about to fall apart and you see like this big, huge global scheme basically like unraveling in front of your eyes, and you see no one get punished for it. You see like, you know, the American dream is like maybe never existed, but maybe did for some people, but definitely doesn't anymore. Right. Mm-hmm. And that to me was probably the charging element. When and also like having to go into the real world, right, and not just be high like at
so
college
had,
every
you
day.
You had Bush like you're almost most of your like early adult life.
Yeah, and was I guess in office. But even that was like I remember, and I was in, you know, I went through the punk thing when I was in like ninth or tenth Florida or whatever, Florida punk.
No Idea Records.
A lot of hardcore shit. You know, they're pretty politically active, but all that stuff kind of just like it didn't register with me. I was more just generally pissed off at being alive and miserable, yeah, or whatever. Yeah. Keeping politics out of it. But you know, a lot of it was just like a deep shame from being from Florida and just like America in general. And, you know, it's like one of those things, and the older I get too, where it's just like we could be so much better and we're not. And it's just like, well, how? It just probably will never really get that much better. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very dark, pessimistic time, I guess. It's weird to see what's happening now is, and this it's not really necessarily working that well, is like the left in the position where we're like, we're the real patriots and we're the real, you know, we, like that's the thing. Like when you have like, obviously people are, you know, the Russia stuff is like part of that. And then just, that's like, it's hard to get that base back.
Yeah. Don't know. I mean, the Democratic Party kind of lost the American brand a while ago.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
But they tried to get it back, and I don't... But
they're still trying.
The thing is, though, it's like who cares? It doesn't matter. We've got, like, stuff we need to do. Like,
yeah.
So that's the... I don't know. It's kind of... I think a lot of that is a distraction, but it's like, it's almost impossible not to be distracted by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
So what drew you to Best of Enemies? Is it part of the civility that these guys had?
Yeah, like, I mean
it was yeah, civil.
It's like Marquis de Sade, or what, no, there's like the Queensberry rules of boxing or whatever. Yeah, it's like,
right,
you know, there's like
gentleman sport.
Yeah, exactly. But what I like about them is that they're smart. That's basically what I like about it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it's almost like a documentary version of a Whit Stillman movie, where it's like, you know,
a lot of talking.
I like movies where people talk, and I like people who can talk, because I like to think that I can a little bit, but some of my like Casey Lai.
Mm-hmm.
Casey Lai to me is like a Vidal type. Like I can just watch
him
talk.
That's a high compliment, yeah.
Like I can just watch him talk and watch him talk about anything, and yeah. I think James Fritz is like that too, and I like that. I enjoy that. I enjoy a good like verbal sparring thing.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I'll say is that it's kind of like, you know, obviously these guys were both, and also these guys are not perfect. Obviously Buckley's not perfect. Vidal's not perfect either. But like he said some really out there fucking shit, especially near the end.
Mm-hmm.
But they had, you know, like at least the Republican's smart. Like, at least the Republican can string together a sentence. And even if I totally disagree with his viewpoint and his opinion, he or she could articulate it and honestly show a little enthusiasm about wanting to engage it in a discussion, which there is absolutely no attempt. I will say this on either side right now, of actually having the discussion. Because it's all wrapped up in fake news and alternative facts and shit like that. And, like, that's the thing. It's, like, we don't have, like, it would be one thing if there was a GOP senator that, like, came out and was like, here's why this Trump care bill is great. Here's why we like it. But no one's doing that.
Right.
Because they're just trying to, like, pass it in the dead of night.
Yeah.
And
well, when you're trying to dismantle the Obama, you know, improvements, and you know people aren't going to go for it, then you try to pass that shit.
And I will say I'm obviously very liberal, very progressive, whatever, but the Democratic Party and the liberals have the same problem, because we've almost gone in the opposite direction where we're talking too much. We're talking amongst ourselves, which is all fine, and it's great to get on the same page and everything, but it's like the other side isn't concerned at all with being right or being accurate.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just saying things like full-throated. We're so worried about including the right people making sure we learn from our mistakes.
Intersectionality.
Intersectionality, making sure that we put together the put up the liberal person, not the centrist, whatever.
Yeah.
That it's like, well, we're so obsessed with being right that we're not that we're going to be wrong.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So it's a weird thing because the Best of Enemies is obviously such an example of high dialogue, even though it's not, even though it devolved into name calling, right. Just like everything else, like a YouTube thread.
Yeah.
But which I think is kind of the like inherent like horror movie aspect of it all is that it's like even our best minds will devolve
into human nature.
And because it is, because at the end of the day, it is a fucking culture war. It is saying you people are wrong and you're, and the way you live your life is wrong.
Yeah.
And you know, we're never going to be happy. I think until I just don't think we'll ever fully accept each other. I think that it is on some level going to be a like, one side needs to catch up or one side needs to like calm down or something like that. I don't know. But I don't think it'll ever happen.
To help us extract meaning from these conventions, two of America's most eloquent commentators, William Buckley and Gore Vidal.
Bill Buckley was the first modern conservative to see that ideological debates were cultural debates.
Mr. Buckley, do you think miniskirts are in good taste?
On you, I think they are.
The people at ABC asked him, well, is there anybody you wouldn't go on with? And he said, the only one I can think of is Gore Vidal.
Gore Vidal is one of America's most successful and distinguished writers.
We are all prostitutes in one sense or another, ethically, if not sexually.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What you're saying about Buckley and Vidal is like, it's almost like you could think about it kind of like Professor X, Magneto kind of
thing. So William F. Buckley is like the founder of National Review. He's the intellectual like force behind the neoconservative movement, I guess you would say.
He had the ear of Reagan and everything.
He was a big Reagan guy, and he ran for mayor of New York. Vidal was the, you know, left wing
but he came
novelist.
He came of a very, very traditional
they both came from a lot of money and success and stuff, and Vidal was, you know, he was the one talking about how, you know, the top 5% of the top 5% of the population has 90% of the income and all. He was saying this back in 68. And he was, you know, he was in like the Norman Mailer, Noam Chomsky camp of intellectual liberals. But what I really appreciated about Vidal was just that he was so, you know, he wrote about, you know, transgender issues. He had a trans character first one ever. I think he had the...
From Myra Breckinridge,
And I think City in the Pillar is the first novel to deal with someone who's openly homosexual. And so I just like that he's like... Which I do think is kind of... Like, basically it comes down to like pushing the envelope versus like traditional conservatism. And I just always fall on the line. I just think like... Doing things for tradition's sake, doing things just because that's how your father did it or whatever, I just think is such a dumb way to live life just in general. So that's where I think, you know, a lot of the conflict between Buckley and Vidal, even though they look and dress and talk like they should be school best children. Friends
right.
or
yeah.
something,
yeah.
It just comes down to like all these like X, Y, like just completely opposite ways of looking at life, which is... You know, that's going to influence your politics. So, I don't know. It's just interesting to me how that shook out and how, Now it just seems like there's no sort of actual dialogue, and because it's like who's the foremost thinker on either side? I would say, I mean, like, we still got Noam, we still got Chomsky, paying taxes over in Cambridge, you know, but on the Republican side,
Alex
it's like,
Jones.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like
the intellectual
people,
force.
These
Alex
people
Jones.
Are idiots, and they love it. It's like Bill O'Reilly and
the
Sean
anti-intellectualism.
Hannity.
Yeah.
Like,
anti-intellectualism. America,
exactly. You're dumb if you're smart.
Yeah, I mean, it's so like, stupid. Yeah. I hate it so much, and I think it's really a big problem. But it,
Fox
you know,
News would hate Buckley now the way he talks, just alone, right?
Yeah. Well, I think even near the end, he was distancing himself from Bush and a lot of that stuff, and. You know, like there are some things where Buckley just straight up like had like huge he had huge blind spots on race and the Civil Rights Act and Vietnam and but you know like I don't know it just so it's not even like I'm trying to say like oh Republicans used to be good because they didn't and Democrats have their you know spots in history too but. I don't know it just it does seem like it's just like real I just don't see. How with Trump being president and like how his base is just still so so in support of him, there's no other option for it to be that they're just willfully ignorant and don't care. So, you know, what do you do with that? I don't really know. Well, I don't know how you jolt that awake or anything.
Yeah, I was thinking since you just read the Buckley biography, I'm wondering how much is dedicated to this debate stuff with. Vidal, because it seems like it's almost like a sports movie in a way. Like this, Best of Enemies, is almost like oh, there is like this one life changing thing for these two guys.
Right. The biography actually didn't touch on it that much. There are little pictures that mentioned it, but it was mainly the biography of his life up and until the. Founding of National Review and then a few years after it got rolling and started like it basically goes up to I think it actually goes up to 68 I think that actually is what happened but yeah there wasn't I mean obviously the Best of Enemies documentary really dives into you know both of their lives and their relationship and where they were and how they made their bones and everything but yeah the book was way more focused on his upbringing and how that influenced his opinions and how he cobbled together. Because there is like the Republican Party, what is kind of beautiful about it is that it's never stood for anything. It's never stood for a damn thing. It's always just
it's the party of no.
It's stood for obstructionism, but it's also stood for, you know, it used to be a party of ideals in that. Which ideals will help us win, what's going to work in these situations. Now it is truly, I think, a party of no ideas all. I don't think that there's any, it's all
destroy
reaction.
Government.
It was just a reaction to Obama, to Obamacare, to the perceived like socialization of America, et cetera, and like the war mentality on both sides is really out of control at this point. But so that was my favorite part of the book is how he took from these guys like there's this guy named Strauss who was like a big he was like a paleo conservative an old school conservative and I think English philosopher Edmund Burke and so it's like it was interesting to me to see and this guy Rossiter and stuff like that it's like okay he like to see that he truly cherry picked like okay we like this. We like this sense of individualism, but we also do. And what we'll also say about those old Republicans too is that they saw a need for government, which now is like they're trying to act like they're not. But it's like, well, how are you guys gonna have jobs if you don't have government?
Yeah.
Like it doesn't make any sense. There's a lot of like logical inconsistencies within the Republican Party too, which is what happens when you cannibalize yourself so many times and like put in all these ideas over and over.
It takes a big government to create a small government.
Absolutely.
You know, as you try to downsize anything, you're creating other agencies and other things. It makes no fucking sense to me.
Well, and also we're such a bit like, I just don't understand how you can say that there's not a role for big government because How can you be? How can USA be number one and not have a big government?
Well, they want a big military. That's like all they want is a big military.
And if Reagan was such a fucking king that when he said the era of big government, it's, you know, like his whole thing, it's like it's gotten bigger. So shit doesn't make any sense.
To me.
I think the Republicans just seem anti-American to me. You know, and I hate when fucking Democrats move to the right and move to centrist positions just to get elected because they're like, I need to seem somewhat like a Republican.
Well, they're trying to get like some flipping some like suburban Republican voters and stuff like that, but like that didn't even stuff. Work.
No, yeah. Soccer moms work. And Daytona dads.
Yeah, and like I don't. I mean, a lot of people say like, oh, we just got to go further left. Like, I don't think that that will result in winning in a lot of places, but I do think that there's a little bit more integrity in it, and maybe I don't know. It's just so clearly too that, I mean, just the fact that. You know, big business is so firmly entrenched. That's what I guess you can kind of say. That's the worst thing about having a successful two-term president is that your party's the power party.
Yeah.
Like even though Republicans had power in the Senate and governorships and whatever, if you're the fucking president, you're the power party. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Wall Street, like fossil fuels, all these companies. They're in bed now with the Democrats just as much as they would be with the Republicans.
Yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, well, how do you then make a comparison as the other party when you're taking money from the same people? It's, but then you need the money to run because the elections are so fucking expensive.
Yeah.
It's like until we find a way to run a truly, truly cheap, cheap digital grassroots campaign. I don't know how we're going to get out of this. There's two sides of the same coin, you know. I mean, I say that because I do still think that obviously issues like healthcare, civil rights, like things like that. Clearly, the Democratic Party is the right party on those issues. But I don't know. I mean,
there's a sense that everyone has where like there so many protest votes that there would be, you know, like third party like. How many Gary Johnson?
Gary Johnson,
and like, and the Green Party people, like there was still
Jill Stein.
Yeah, like people are so sick of that. Everyone grew up with Republicans and Democrats, you know. So
yeah,
we're just so entrenched.
Where I grew up in Michigan, there's a huge libertarian streak in Michigan, you know, and even I used to
Colorado
read
Reason, too. I think
Reason
right?
magazine. I don't know if you ever.
Is that a libertarian
that.
Magazine?
Yeah.
I don't think I
used to peruse that a little bit. But like, I mean, there's still
the whole Ron Paul thing was an interesting phenomenon and you know, it was going to have a moment and then Trump came along and I mean, you know, it's just, and even the libertarians are so crazy, but some of their, they seem like they're thinking about what they're saying a little bit. Like I hate Ayn Rand. So I think
of course.
There's a lot in the biography actually about how Ayn Rand influenced like Greenspan and shit like that. And Buckley and Rand were close friends. And God, just what an awful.
Yeah.
Awful view perspective.
Also, really bad writing.
And not good writing.
The Fountainhead, I think, is a pretty good.
I started reading.
I like The Fountainhead.
Yeah.
But horrible ideology. Absolutely.
And just forming these
so
clubs
selfish.
And spreading it around. Yeah, that's the thing to me is that it's like, yeah, why would you want to live? Why, even if that was. Because also, it's just not the way it works. Like, it's just not the way it works.
No.
You need help.
You need poor people.
Just like I don't know. I just can't really get it.
Yeah.
But.
There's an argument, I guess you'd say, that a lot of this is about the media itself.
Sure. Like,
this documentary itself.
Yeah.
Best of Enemies. I mean, I like that thing in the beginning of like, there was just CBS, NBC, and then if there was a fourth place, ABC would have been fourth place.
Yeah.
Like it's just was such an outlier and you see, like, young Sam Donaldson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
that was surprising.
I loved that. I was like, who the fuck? I know that voice.
Yeah, who's that guy?
Like, who is that guy? Yeah.
But, like, yeah, it was, like, almost, like, having the talking head. But also, like, I guess it made sense for Buckley to represent the right. Did it make sense? Like, if I was a Democratic Party, would I want Gore Vidal to be the person
that
represents
the
left
time,
in a debate?
I think so, because I'm trying to think.
He's kind of tied to the Kennedys.
He's tied to the Kennedys. He ran a campaign. He came from a political family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's a pretty full-throated. He was the most eloquent speaker of that they probably had. Norman Mailer. It could have been someone like Norman Mailer, but yeah, he would have just gotten drunk and like punched someone. Yeah. Yeah, so that was, I mean, they are like sort of a perfect pairing of like, but that's the other thing too, is that they're also still just two white guys. Like, you know, and like.
Very like East Coast, like.
She's patrician, like, blue bloods.
Mm-hmm. Like, we're, Brahmin, like this weird transatlantic accents.
Are yeah, those like, fucking accents.
They're talking like Frasier. Oh my God. No one else in their family probably even talks like
right.
that.
Yeah,
like,
Frasier and Niles are up there.
Which is why they, I think they picked him to do.
Yes, Kelsey, the guy Kelsey Grammer and
John Lithgow.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, those guys with clenched jaws. Yeah, very clenched, like the main accent.
Yeah, as much as I kind of hate Kelsey Grammer, his fucking voice is amazing.
Oh yeah, it was so funny. I mean, Frasier. I mean, I love Frasier.
I love John Lithgow.
Yeah, I do too.
There we go.
But it is odd that, like, I mean, it was such an experiment for ABC to bring these guys on to try this shit, and they even show the fact that the ABC facade at the convention falls over in Miami.
Well, it's also crazy to realize that, they used to just fucking put the cameras on conventions for 6 hours and just air everything.
Yeah.
What a bunch of fucking morons.
I know.
That's the most boring shit in the world.
So boring. Living in the 60s must have been fucking nuts.
And Paul Newman
boring.
Was a delegate? Is that right? Yeah. Wow. And I didn't realize that. I started watching... United States of Amnesia, which is that other Gore Vidal doc, and like him and Joanne Woodward, and I said Joanna Newsom. Joanne Woodward and Paul Newman were close with Vidal too. And then I didn't understand. His relationship to Jacqueline Bouvier was like through. They were like step siblings or
something like that.
At
some
point through marriage.
Yeah, and he hated Bobby Kennedy.
Yeah,
which is weird to hear that, because especially because he considered Bobby Kennedy to be kind of dumb and just like an opportunist. And
well,
like,
I think he also had the thing where he like had high hopes for the Kennedys, and then he saw them get bought and everything.
Yeah,
and go into Vietnam and all this stuff, and he, you know, the Democratic Party became a war party and all that stuff. So.
Actually, in United States of Amnesia, there was a very good quote, which I thought about Obama. It was just like, Vidal's like, I have a photo of JFK, not because we're friends, not because we had a great time together, but I just wanted to be reminded to never fall for a charming man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is that Vidal and, you know, Buckley too. Buckley, what I'll say about Buckley is I think that he would be vehemently against Trump. I think it would be against that whole side of the party. Mm-hmm. When George Wallace, the fucking segregationist governor of Alabama, made his bid in, God, was that 88? Did he run that late?
He would have been
68.
So old.
It was 68, I think.
Was he was running? He was up for the Republican ticket?
68 or 70? No, he went on his own ticket.
Oh, he
ran both, 68 and 72.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
68, he was probably 72. I think he was an independent.
Mm-hmm. And or was it Strom Thurmond that ran on the Dixiecrat ticket? But anyway.
In the 50s.
This is in the 60s, because, or 70s. Buckley had. And also, you can watch a lot of old firing lines on Amazon Prime.
Oh, nice.
And so there's one where he interviews George Wallace when he's running for president again. And it's like he just baited a fucking trap for this dumb. And he sat, you know, he's like, how could you stand by the good people of Alabama? You know, like all this stuff. And George Wallace just looks like a dumb Southern idiot.
Yeah.
And that's because... he didn't want Buckley didn't want that to be associated with the Republican Party, because he knows that the only way to actually get away with that nefarious shit is not to look like that and not sound like that and not agitate those types of people. And that was a big thing in the book that I read, was about how there was a real struggle for what the Republican Party was going to be, and it was around the era that what's that guy's name? In Your Guts, You Know He's Nuts. Not Rockefeller. The guy from Goldwater.
Oh, Barry Goldwater.
Goldwater ran. There was this thing called the John Birch Society.
Oh, John Birch Society,
which was like the loonies. They're like the Looney Tune, like
the
racist
guys.
But they had a huge following, and they had a lot of money and influence. And that was the most interesting. And that was probably Buckley's greatest victory. Beyond getting Reagan into the White House early on, was wresting control from the John Birch Society and basically making them obsolete and a laughingstock. And he did that. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is like, okay, you're kind of in the right place a little bit. Like, you at least don't want to be the worst of the worst. And it, but right. I mean, I still disagree with their principles and their policies and everything. But there is at least honor to it there.
Yeah.
And that is, I think, is just totally gone now.
And now I'm watching old firing lines because they talk about how both these guys are like witty and like, got snaps. They got jokes.
Yeah, they're funny.
Like how does Buckley hold up on the firing lines?
It's funny. He's good. It's a really entertaining show. I mean, I would say for political shows, that and early Politically Incorrect and the McLaughlin Group are pretty good. Like, pretty good, like, exchange of ideas and in an entertaining way where it's not totally boring. But, yeah, I mean, Buckley... And also, the thing about Buckley, too, is that he had Norman Mailer on. He had Noam Chomsky on. Mm-hmm. He had Allen Ginsberg on. He had Jack Kerouac on when he was drunk. Like, it just, like, it was a fun show, and he opens up to, you know, questions from the crowd. And he's simultaneously, like... His intros to his guests are like these long meandering prologue slash epilogue slash like obituary. he's like throwing shade but as like in a complimentary way. It's very, I mean, that's the other thing too, is just like, God, what can you do with language and what can you do with words and the written word and the spoken word? That really appeals to me, obviously. But some of the episodes I would say are worth watching just because it's like, I mean, the George Wallace one is really, really great because Wallace is also doing that too. He's just doing it in his like Alabama way.
Right.
Like slick, like, you know, political huckster guy. Mm-hmm. So that's like an interesting thing too. And then Noam Chomsky and him are great because they're just, the way they talk is so different. Noam talks so clearly, and just like, he's like, that's factually incorrect, Mr. Buckley, what you're saying is factually incorrect. And he's like, oh, no, it's not. You know, whatever. And so it's just like interesting to be like, because now you can't even have really those types of conversations because people aren't as prepared. Right. They don't know their stuff as much. They're not operating from facts or dialogue or discussion. They're operating from, here's the end point I want to reach. Here's what I'm going to say.
Well, like, do you think it's partly to do with, like, this classical education these guys got? Like, they're probably, like they're super...
I think so. I mean, they're smart, but, I mean, like, Vidal didn't go to college.
That's right.
You know? So I don't know. I think it was more of a product of it being a different time and the fact that, you know, what they kind of contributed to, ironically, with the fact that they were the first... They were the first thing like that during a convention or an election year. Their like hyper intellectualism, which worked great when it's just them on this one time on the show, gave way to creating the format that would completely destroy intellectualism in the country.
But you also had an audience that could sit and listen to it and understand what they're saying and enjoy it.
You also only had three channels to choose from. Yeah. So the thing is that it's like, that's the one thing that I also always go back to, is that people say like, oh, it used to be different back then, blah, blah. It's like, well, they had less choices. I don't know if you also could have watched Vanderpump Rules if people would have tuned in to see Buckley and Vidal debate. I don't know.
These were two visions of America clashing.
Each thought that the other was quite dangerous.
All this security makes me very nervous because it's necessary, apparently.
If Buckley were not taken out, his ideas would take down the nation.
The country is being split at the seams.
It's almost as if they were matter and antimatter.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Dealing with podcasts, like, that is a place you can get into long form.
There's some great political,
sure,
yeah, great political podcasts.
But it's probably just like, you know, 8 people listening, you know.
Well, and they're not, I mean, a lot of them too, it's like, it's a liberal podcast that has even more liberal people on it. Like, right. I mean, right. It's, you don't see a great debate political podcast.
I'm a fan of, I've been listening to lots of Anna Marie Cox's show, do you know, with Friends Like These, which is always the idea. It's like two people that, it talks about, like, basically, like, having common conversations between, like, a right,
yeah,
a conservative and a
but
liberal.
The conservatives knew long ago that wedge issues is what drives people to the voting booths, yeah, and that's what they're all about. Mm-hmm. They don't want to have a real debate. They want these little wedge issues of,
well,
you know.
They're also just straight up, I mean, at this point, too, just the voter suppression is just so out of control that it's like, that's another thing where I'm like, I just don't know how we fix this, because...
Yeah.
They're gerrymandering to the districts. They're suppressing votes. They're knocking people off polls. They're making it hard. They're literally making it harder to vote. And that's the thing where I'm like, that should be a wedge issue for the Democrats.
Should be.
It should be. They did this with, like, pledging allegiance to the American flag. Who gives a fuck about that?
Yeah.
Like, in schools. But that became, like, a big issue.
Right.
It affects nothing in the society. It does nothing for money or anything. But what is more American than telling someone that they should be allowed to vote and telling someone that they can't, making it harder? Mm-hmm. It's so un-American. But the problem is that that's wrapped up with, like, the illegal immigration thing and, you know, the othering of the non-white citizen in America. And so now it's kind of like, well, yeah, it's not American to tell someone they can't vote, but they're not really American.
Are you guys do you guys follow Greg Palast at all?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, because he was actually, he was in Georgia. He was, like, trying to ask, is it her name, Handel?
Yeah.
He was, like, following her around at a talk, being like he was worried about voter suppression in Georgia, in that district too.
Yeah,
and the people are just, like, yelling at him, like, fake news, get out of here, fake news.
I mean, I think a great thing would just be to just start saying, the only reason Republicans are winning is because of voter suppression. This is a big issue. They're taking over the government, and they're doing it by lying and cheating and changing the rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that that could be the type of thing where it's like, that transcends party lines, to me at least.
It still makes liberals sound like a teacher, rules are changing.
Yeah.
Like, so that's, like, the thing
they're
we
snitches.
Can never get out of, like, being,
right,
like, the left being kind of like, you're not being fair.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Which,
like,
is, the Republicans,
you know,
do that too, though.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, in the 2000 recount, the Republicans were the ones that were like, meh.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to steal this.
But that creates liberals going to the right and being more hawkish, so they can appear to be more, you know, military, you know. Which is ridiculous in itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that was the thing, too, that I was like, when the Georgia 6th special election, I was like, y'all better not put any of your hope in Georgia. Like, I don't care what division of the state it is. It's like, that's a dumb fucking Republican state.
Yeah.
It's Georgia. Like, we're, you know, and...
I think it's because Hillary did well, right? Is that why they thought
they had
a chance?
I think she did pretty... I think she beat Trump, maybe, in that county. I don't know.
And so they're just like,
they're hoping and praying.
And, like, I didn't even do that much research on that guy. I'm like, yeah, it's sure. Like, whatever. I knew young left guy. That sounds good. Or, like, I've been, you know, in El Paso, there's Beto O'Rourke.
Yeah.
Who's going... I think he's trying to go up against Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
So, like, it's like... I just want to see Ted Cruz.
Well, the guy,
I don't know what else.
Guy going up against Paul Ryan.
Yeah. Also, he, like, was in some emo bands or something. Uh-huh. So that's I'm like, yeah, I'll vote for that guy.
Yeah,
even though I can't. I don't live there. I can't vote for that guy.
I don't know really what the solution is, because I just think in a lot of those areas they're just going to lose. But I do think you run and you try to run a good campaign and you try to run a good candidate just because it keeps people excited.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that they did that. I mean, I'm not going to be like, oh, it's a good thing because we only lost by this many points. I was just like, I kind of thought that he was going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Trump.
Ossoff?
Ossoff.
Oh, yeah. Ossoff.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I obviously don't know, but
it doesn't sound like you're like, I'm gonna do Indivisible and like kind of like try to help like do more Democrat, get more involvement in Democratic situation.
I want to do whatever I can in terms of like donating time and money. But I just think that, I kind of think it's a fool's errand right now. I just don't think that there's going to be a lot of winning on our side for a while.
Yeah.
And like, I think that it's going to take something really, really big to, reset this. And I think it's going to be, I don't know what's going to happen or anything, but I do feel like something's going to happen, like Watergate or something.
Yeah.
That I think will kind of shuffle the deck again and make it, you know, but again, I don't know. We're so far down the role of like anti-intellectualism and deep money pockets.
The Democrats are going to need to find a really strong message and some really great candidates as well. Because even after Watergate, all we got was Carter, and then it was back to Republicans again for quite a while.
Yeah.
You know, until Clinton ran basically as a Republican.
Right.
You know, Republican light. And that's what Democrats seem to have to do on the national platform.
Interesting, too, thinking about how the fact I didn't know that both Buckley and Vidal had actually run for office before. So that gives them this added layer to their thing. Right. In a way, they're also like, and it, maybe in both cases, they didn't really expect to win. It sounds like Vidal thought he could
win. I think Vidal thought that he could have won.
Because his family and the Kennedy connections and whatnot.
I think Buckley had no... I think Buckley knew that he would lose without a doubt. He was he was running as a...
Yeah.
He was running for his magazine. He was running as a stunt to...
which is kind of what I thought Trump was doing at first.
We all did.
Yeah.
But I think he got a little help, though, from our friends across the pond. But it's... What I thought was interesting was, like, there was, what, 8 of these debates?
I think so. I think 4 and 4. Mm-hmm. I think because they did it at both conventions.
Right.
Yeah.
In Florida and Miami and Chicago, and how short they seemed to be. Like, were they like, it seemed like they were like 10 minutes
long.
Well,
I mean, maybe they didn't just, there's probably cherry picked the best parts for the doc.
That could be.
I don't know. I didn't even know that I have heard a lot about, like, they showed a clip from Haskell Wexler's movie at the DNC. What was the name of his movie? But you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
like, he's a cinematographer guy, but he kind of used footage from Chicago and then like kind of made a story out of it. That's like, the 68, just in general, all across all like political and cultural stuff, that's like such like a...
It was a flashpoint for sure.
Serious, heavy time.
Yeah.
And when you say this thing of like things have always been crazy, I kind of have to... like watching this was like, oh yeah, even shit Vidal saying is still applicable. Is this the craziest? Was that the craziest? What's been like? Is there a crazier crazy?
It's a circle of crazy. I mean, American politics from the get go, from the jump, has been fucking nuts.
I mean, yeah. I mean, and Trump winning is pretty.
That's
fucking
nuts.
That's like.
I mean, that's
no
like,
one would have. That's
it's so American. It's so.
It is. Yeah.
You know, it's so like, oh, we are that dumb. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Cool.
My roommate, who's African American, popped his head in. I was watching election results. I'm like, it's gonna be Hillary. He's like, are you fucking nuts? Like, this country's racist.
Yeah.
So Trump's gonna win. I'm like, you're nuts. Mm-hmm. She's up 85%, and then like, oh fuck.
Yeah.
Like, oh shit, he's right.
That was a hard night.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing too, is that it's one of those things where it's like, oh, you don't think it's going to happen, and then it's like, I guess it makes sense because, you know...
He's a salesman.
He's a salesman, yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, and also I do think...
And Hillary ran a horrible campaign.
And even more important than that, she's just straight up... She is just... A lot of people just do not like her, and they'll never like her.
Yes.
And that's just... It's not fair, and it's obviously not right, but I think that's kind of... The way that my parents talk about Hillary Clinton... is so divorced from reality and anything that it's just like, I just don't like that lady. Like the way that she looks, she looks so smug. I'm
she's
like,
she's a bitch.
Yeah, I'm just like, I don't know. I mean, that's the thing that's so crazy to me too, is that like, what is going on with you when you think that the smart person, what makes you think, I mean, are you just dumb and like insecure? So like, if you see a smart person, you're like, well, I don't like that person.
Yeah.
Me, if I'm an idiot, I look at someone smart and I go, like, God, I would love to emulate that and be better.
Right.
But I don't know. It's just so crazy to me that you know, millions and millions of people in the country don't do that.
Yeah. Well, they feel like at some point they were told that they were less than
maybe,
because they
I
didn't go to college or they work a menial job or something. I don't know where all this. I think it was Republican
some of these
branding.
Went to college too, mm-hmm. though.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's just weird to me.
I know. I get it. Do you do comedy in like conservative areas? Do you do
every once in a while? I do casinos, and those are always pretty red, no matter where you are. Mm-hmm.
Do you change your set?
Not really. Which doesn't always go well, but you know, a lot of times people are like, "Oh, you guys say all this shit here in L.A. and California," and I'm like, "Well, I've gone on the road and said my like, I hope Donald Trump dies shit," and it's like, it doesn't necessarily, it's not great, it's not fun,
yeah.
But usually at all those shows, I'm actually doing a show in Wilmington, North Carolina, and I always look up if it's outside of California, and even in California, I always look up like, who they vote for, what's going right. on, what's the vibe. And usually, usually comedy clubs get the cool people in the scene. They're the people that want to have fun and whatever. But usually in every place that I've gone, even when I perform in Florida and whatever, at the end of the show, no matter how the show went, someone will come up and be like, thank God you're saying this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Because
I'm like, I was apolitical when I was growing up in that part of the country. But I was looking around and I was like, you people are fucking dumb and pretty
right.
mean.
Yeah.
Like, then there's no reason to be this way. And I think that kind of bringing in that mentality of like, the people that everyone around you voted for is a fucking moron. I think some people are like, oh, thank God someone, like, they, because
yeah.
they're scared to say it.
Yeah.
So I kind of am always like, and you know, I will say this now too. The nice part is we're the underdogs now. So, and that's not a bad role to be in America. Right. Like, it's because the Republicans always overplay their hand and
that is true.
Usually are brought down by some form of corruption. If you look at, I guess Iron Contra didn't really bring them down, but, and you know, WMDs didn't really bring down Bush or anything, but they suffered.
Yeah.
They all suffered at some point.
Well, their inability to really govern doesn't help.
It's,
you know,
again,
they don't really
it's
govern.
A logical inconsistency. Why, if you think that the government should be small, why the
yeah.
fuck are you running
right.
for you're office?
Just, you're just making it bigger.
Check out,
mm-hmm.
move to the farm.
Right.
Like, don't get involved. Like,
yeah,
that's right. the thing to me that makes no sense.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, no, you want power. You just want your own type
right.
of power.
Mm-hmm. That's that libertarian streak where they're just like, I don't want the government around me. I don't want to be part of it. Like,
yeah.
I don't want it. That's... Yeah, those are the kind of...
God bless those people.
Yeah, those are the kind of people I grew up around. Like, kind of socially liberal, fiscally conservative, and they just don't want government around them,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know?
That's like Michigan style.
Yeah, the middle streak of Michigan there is... Because I've worked in politics a lot when
yeah.
I was in college and growing up, and I worked for... I had to work for a lot of Republicans, but I also worked for Carl Levin, who is
yeah.
like the kindly shoe cobbler of the Democratic
sure.
Party, you know, like... That guy was...
He's still around, right? Or is he
He's
gone?
Retired.
He's retired.
Yeah,
now, yeah.
And his brother was part...
He was... yeah, he always... Him and... I think Markey is a senator now. But yeah, there's all these like old gray hairs, like Mondale types
yeah.
that are still around.
Yeah.
These Mondale Democrats.
Yeah, the Mondale... Yeah. But like those guys always loved Gerald Ford. Like that was their... Like he was like very... He was pretty socially liberal,
mm-hmm.
Ford, and just basically a classic fiscal conservative, you know,
mm-hmm.
like that was what he was all about. But then you have this libertarian streak of the farmers in the middle of the state that are just like, I don't
mm-hmm.
even want the postman to come to my
yeah.
fucking door. Like,
yeah.
I don't care.
Deregulate the mail, yeah.
Yeah, get that shit away from me.
Yeah.
What I thought was interesting, though, is what we haven't yet talked about, though, is like, I mean, even these... And giant intellectuals couldn't really get to a point of a consensus. You
no.
know? And like you were talking, I think before we started recording, it got to basically a fight.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, and the documentary puts this very well, is that, you know, yes, they're debating the conventions and what they're seeing before their eyes, but they also are, you know, they're using the bully pulpit to be like, hey, if you're watching this, come over to my side.
Yeah.
This guy's a fucking idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And so Vidal especially was like, he's like, oh, this is like a hit job. Like, he's
yeah.
like going up for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, they're also two like smart boys that want to show off.
Right.
So,
yeah,
like,
for sure.
They need each other to do that.
Yeah.
And it, but it, I mean, the way that it devolved, it literally devolves into name calling. He calls him, what, a queer?
Queer. Yeah. And said he's going to punch him.
And then, because Vidal called him a Nazi.
Crypto-Nazi.
Crypto-Nazi.
Crypto-Nazi. What a great, what a great line.
That, yeah. I mean, I think they were saying it is like a sports movie in that sense, or just like that thing of like Buckley's just overextending and then, like, he's gonna get tired at some point.
Verbal and pugilists.
And that's like, the thing though, is that it's like, even on the shows I like now, where like I know that he's problematic, but I'll still watch Bill Maher, I'll watch Real Time, because there's at least some semblance of a discussion, and the interviews are usually pretty interesting. But he even there, it's just not, it's not as good as this. It's not as good as Buckley and Vidal. Like, the way that they talk and the way that they're weaving in their commentary with facts, with cited facts, you just will. I don't know if we'll ever see that again. I truly don't know who would even come close to these to these this level of intellect now.
Do you like those? Like, I guess people like, you know, when Jon Stewart would interview someone who is, you know, it seems like you're both like not into it.
I don't think that that's really, because Stewart would also, I don't know. It's more entertaining.
It's still entertainment. Yeah.
And this was like the entertainment came secondary to facts and commentary and things like that. And it just so happened that they were clever, funny people. But, you know, they weren't trying to put on a comedy show.
Right.
Okay. And I think that when you are trying to put on a comedy show, I think Colbert is pretty good. But again, these guys also, those aren't, I don't know. I just don't think that they have the, venom or something.
Different purposes, I guess. But it seems like, there's like Moshe's show, there's like Jim Jeffries' show, there's like
a, now, and that's the thing too. It's like there's a million,
there's so many of these, like,
there's
explainer
a million
shows
of these issues shows we're trying to get different viewpoints on, but none of them actually, I think, do it. They're funny shows and there's good bits on them and they're jokes and stuff.
Yeah.
But I think, I actually think that this, the what am I trying to say? The premise or the presumption that it's a comedy show, I think colors it in a way that can't make it actually effective with dialogue. I think that the insistence on... that's why I think that there is a place... I mean, there probably isn't. Their advertisers don't want it and people wouldn't watch it. But it would be great if there could be a truly discussion-based show where maybe one of the people has a comedy background or whatever, but like... You know, you want the actual people that are like driving these movements to be discussing. But now those people don't want to talk. And I don't even know who those people are on the Democratic side. Like, the Democratic side is in such a disarray that they can't get on the same page. And actually what needs to be happening between Republicans and Democrats is happening just within the Democratic Party. So we're kind of like spinning our wheels on this side of like, why should the Democratic diehards are like, well, why should we include you in our party when you guys are shit-talking us? And like, yeah, but you need us, and we're the youth, and we're the future. And there's like this struggle. But meanwhile, what we're doing now, the Republicans are just passing laws and, you know, suppressing the vote.
There's no,
extending
you think the
war,
desire,
bringing more troops. Yeah. They're giving the Pentagon like so much more leeway than they've ever had before. It's just like, you know.
So it's like the demand, there's no commercial reason for it to happen.
Yeah,
it's
right.
And there was the way society is set up.
And there wasn't this. There was a commercial reason because...
We got to try anything.
We got to try anything. We don't have any money. We can do this. So it was like a necessity thing. But yeah, I mean that... And we're beholden to our media, which is, at this point, incredibly... ran by corporations. Right.
Yeah, and there's no... Like, when you had three channels... Then there was kind of the idea that you had to, they were kind of like a commons or something. There was like some, and I guess PBS kind of was that, but like now PBS has like been politicized too. I mean, they're trying to defund
Street.
It. Yeah, they're trying to defund this
Big
shit.
Big Bird's a fucking hot button.
He's
issue
a communist.
Now.
Yeah.
I know. I don't remember. Maybe it was Moshe Kasher that said that maybe things won't change until you can vote through your Xbox.
Something like that.
Yeah. I think I remember that being one of his
first person shooter voting game. Yeah.
No, Republicans would suppress the vote, so you could only vote through your Sega Saturn.
Yeah. Or a Wii.
Yeah. So there's like a a media problem that is happening now, which we can try to like look at lessons from this and apply it to that. But it really just seems like this is just like, here's a prototype for just men yelling at each other.
Yeah.
That's basically what we end up with.
Yes, exactly. And like, you can't...
Which I guess is podcasting also. So in a way, are we part of this, you know?
The media just sucks too. I mean, that's a whole nother discussion, but like the media is so complicit in all this.
Yeah. You know, the other thing too now is that there's a lot of people, you know, there's like Milo. And then there's
Richard Spencer.
And then there's
Bannon, who's a media guy.
Yeah. You know, Alex Jones, like all these different voices are now all, they're all trying to do what Buckley already did, which is be the person that's sort of like running the show and keeping everything in line. But, you know, and the Republican Party is less unified than we think they are.
Yeah.
They have their own issues too, which is so, it's just so crazy that they can't even get like on top of anything. But, you know, that's one thing about Best of Enemies that it showed with these debates was Vidal and Buckley had just as much to gain as ABC did. Buckley gets a huge national visual like representation for his movement, his ideas, and then Vidal gets to do the same thing and gets to try to shut him down and everything.
I mean, like, I think in the Vidal documentary and that United States of Amnesia, it's kind of like he's like talking to someone about that, and he's like, "Yeah, I guess I made Buckley famous."
Yeah,
But I was like, "Oh, and I was already famous, so it didn't matter to me."
He was already on TV.
I like his little this like Italian villa.
Yeah, yeah.
That he has.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he said. What did he say? It's like, I like to come out here and watch the decline of Western civilization. I mean, that's the other reason why I gravitate. There are things I like about Buckley as a person, but Vidal to me is just the way that he doesn't take anything without a grain of salt, and he if you read his historical novels like Burr or whatever, he's throwing shade at George Washington. It's just like so great to me. It's like these guys, like, and even in the books, it's like the old, like, you know, they own slaves, like shit like that. He's like, Thomas Jefferson is fucking Sally in the alley, you know, like stuff like that to me is just like the whole like pomposity of the arrogance of the American ideal and the dream and our founding fathers and all that bullshit. It's just like, they didn't want to pay taxes.
Right.
They like, fuck off. I don't know. It's just so crazy to me. But yeah, that really shines through. And I think that's another thing too, is that it's like, how can, you know, that's kind of always a Democratic Republican thing. The Republicans are like, America's number one. They're so great. And it's like, are you looking around? Like, do you have fucking eyes? Like, what are you talking about?
I know.
Have you ever been to the city?
Yeah.
You know?
They want to own, like, the image of America. And it's like, just like, get over your fucking selves.
Yeah.
There's things to fucking fix that, I spent way too much time with, like, young Republicans. And they're the worst. Because they, like, they all want to hold up.
Recently or back in the day?
Fairly. I mean, I worked on that Republican campaign in 2010. Mm-hmm. I went back to Michigan to work for a Republican that was gay.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, please, like, he's like, send me some liberals from California to help me win this fight.
Uh-huh.
You know, because he was taking on Pete Hoekstra's old seat. I don't know if you know Pete Hoekstra. Mm. He's like the devil incarnate. Like,
yeah.
Super conservative Republican from the west side of Michigan who ended up running for governor. So he gave up his seat, but it was just horrible. And I had to go to these Lincoln dinners.
Yeah.
Like, those kind of things are just horrible places.
Yeah.
Full of horrible Republicans.
Yeah. I've never done any. I was in college. I was in college politics.
Yeah.
For not really a good reason, just to kind of like try to get attention.
Don't
to
you have to,
like,
at Berkeley?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, it's like a requisite, isn't it?
Fun fact, me and Guy Branum were in the same like student government with Chunk from the Goonies.
That's
very
funny.
Weird class.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I was like working with a group of people that are like, you know, like people of color, like radical people that were like working against like the immigration stuff, like the Prop 187 and things like that. So that was kind of like how I ended up there. But then I was like, oh, fuck, I don't want to go to meetings and know about, like, Robert's Rule of Order. I'm not going to be a lawyer.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, everyone else, there was people that were, like, just ended up being in government and
right.
stuff. And
sure.
Like, I'm like, I this was kind of, like, not a joke, but, like, I didn't really want to do this.
That's what it leads to.
Yeah.
A boring life.
And then they're talking about now, like trying to get people to run and stuff. It's like, I'm like, I don't think I would ever want to do that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to run. And like,
oh, that's god awful.
Yeah,
absolutely awful. Trying to get people.
You have
to
be a.
I have a certain. We have egos because we do the thing that we do. But then, like, it's just a whole other thing.
Yeah,
I think it's easier to make someone laugh, though. You don't have to like someone to laugh.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like, yeah. I don't know. I can't even imagine what it must be like. I like the behind the scenes stuff. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's really interesting. But even that is just like. Because of such a level of scrutiny and ego in that situation, and
strategy is fun, but like to be the actual candidate would be it's horrible.
I mean, like, do you guys have thoughts on like who the Democrats should run in 2020? Because there's just like I have impressions of people, but then that's kind of like all like America needs to know, like an impression, like oh yeah, I have a good feeling about Kamala Harris, and like that's
I was
like,
gonna say Harris is probably a good choice. I mean, I would be surprised if Sanders or Warren, one of them, doesn't run.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know though beyond that. There's like some what's her name, like Castro Martinez maybe in Nevada, I think, who's got some interesting positions, but I don't know. It's going to be really interesting. I think it's probably going to be someone we don't really see coming.
Right. I mean, I didn't see Obama coming out of anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. And I think that they'll probably have to do what Obama did, which is basically like win Iowa or New Hampshire and build up a thing, because there's going to be some big name Democrat that runs that shouldn't.
Yeah. Always.
And so we'll see who that is. I would love to see Jerry Brown run for president one more time. I would love to
Governor Moonbeam.
I would love to see President Moonbeam.
That's funny.
Take on Trump.
Yeah.
But I think that's the thing, and that's also the thing that I think we should be thinking of more is who is right to like verbally spar and who is the right person to put up against Trump.
I feel
because
like
Hillary Clinton was not.
No.
Hillary Clinton, it seems like
I
maybe
watched
she
those
should
debates.
Have been, but
it was hard to, it's just like they were playing different games.
Yeah.
That was not a debate. None of that was a debate.
No. I just feel like it's going to come out of celebrityism and Hollywood, like a George Clooney type.
Mark Cuban.
Or a Ben Affleck or a Mark
Rock.
Cuban or The Rock. Like that's, I feel like, is our future.
I think that you're right. I think that it is going to be.
We are Idiocracy style. Yeah.
Schwarzenegger, you know. I mean, Ronald Reagan pretty much started it. However, like with Schwarzenegger and now with Trump on the national level, it's like it's just going to open up all kinds of doors for some Hollywood folk.
I guess it's a good reminder that we survived Reagan, but a lot of people, you know, didn't. So,
it's all
the same.
I mean, it's pretty much all the same. Trump is to me is like really not. I don't want to say evil, but like there's some dire consequences with the way he thinks and the people that he has.
Oh, the fact that a reality star, real estate celebrity is the president is really bad for the country.
It's right.
Really, really, really bad.
Yes.
The fact that no one was like, oh, we just shouldn't vote for this guy because of what he's done. That's really bad. But, you know, they did it with Reagan. And they did it in California with Reagan when he ran for governor. Mm-hmm. So. The things that work in that field do work in politics because it puts you one step ahead of the other guy. You know, the famous like Nixon-Kennedy debate where Kennedy had makeup on and Nixon didn't, you know.
Yeah.
Nixon's sweating like a dog or whatever. You know, it makes sense, but it's just, you know, it's bad.
Yeah. I would also say, like, when there's something like, okay, like, I know I didn't watch the video. I know, like, Kamau Bell had, like, Richard Spencer on his show.
Right, I didn't watch that either.
I didn't watch it either because it's like, you know what, from what I saw the clips of, I'm like, this isn't a debate. There is no substantive debate between Kamau and him. I think Kamau's attitude was like, I'm going to let his words kind of hang himself.
Sure.
But you also just put him on a huge platform. Mm.
Yeah,
CNN.
That's kind of how I feel too. I'm like, we need to not indulge these people. It's like, seems so simple.
Yeah.
It does.
Find the person that can intelligently speak their mind, talk to them, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Spencer seems like as much of a, he's nowhere near like an intellectual, you know.
No,
I wouldn't think so.
Not at all.
and like just putting
it's all passion, it's all just emotion, yeah. and this fear of the globalization and
yeah.
The appeal to nationalism, none of that takes any intelligence.
But that goes back to media in a way, because it's like, okay, putting that rhetoric on a platform that people know, like CNN, like put it on CISO, you know?
Yeah. put it on CISO.
You know, I don't know. What, I don't
to
know
be
what,
around
where
for
where
the next 3 months.
Yeah, yeah. This debate will be up for 3 months.
Yeah.
But it's hard to know. Like, you're saying the media is a problem.
Of course.
But we're also in this... The democratization of media. It's like everyone has their, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I guess I just like got winded just thinking about like
yeah, it's
all
a big,
the possibilities.
It is
of,
big.
Like,
I mean, when you have to have advertisers that subscribe. Advertisers are friends with these fucking politicians.
I keep talking about like these guys. I know there's like those crooked media guys, and they're smartly like they've got a brand, right?
Yeah.
Their brand is a resistance or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Even like there's like problems with some of the stuff they do, but you know, they're smart dudes that are just kind of like, we're turning this into resistance is our brand now,
right?
So
right,
there was like
right.
that stuff, and but like I don't know if we're ever gonna
well, we're not gonna solve it.
If we did, then we'd
It'd
just,
awesome.
Like, let's just start that media company. Right? Even the idea of starting a media company now means something completely different than
yeah,
it did in
yeah.
1968, you know?
Oh, of course.
Remember when, like, Fox came on the scene
yeah.
at all? Actually, that was even its own thing. Like, that was the fourth network for a long
yeah.
time, you know?
Yeah,
and
I remember when CNN was
And that's
just
an ideological
starting.
Network, in a, yeah. you know, even though they were, like, running Married with Children.
Right, yeah.
And, like, 21 Jump Street. I guess that was, like, cops can be young and cool and look like teenagers. They can look like Johnny Depp. Love cops, you know?
Dude.
I don't know. So,
I think
we fixed it.
I think we fixed it. Yeah, I don't know. I'm glad that you brought this doc to
it's
us.
A great thing.
It
think
is
it's,
a great doc.
I, think it's
I wouldn't
watch.
Have watched it. I don't think
just
I would have watched
because
it.
It's, yeah. I think it's truly entertaining because
it is.
Of their back and forth and mm-hmm. their backstories, and you know, it is interesting just to see how they're having the same conversations that we are today.
Yeah.
And the conversation just sounded better back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Gordahl's like, I'm the 5%.
Yes.
But don't listen to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Alan, thank you.
Thanks for
thank
having
you.
Me.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
You can find more episodes of SupDoc, show notes, updates, and more at supdocpodcast.com.
We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at supdocpodcast.
If you have comments, corrections, or want to suggest a documentary, email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.
The show is listener supported. You can donate to the show at patreon.com/supdocpodcast.
If you can't donate financially, please subscribe, comment, or tell a friend about SupDoc.
We'd like to thank Documentary News for their ongoing support.
SupDoc is produced by Will Scovel.
Our theme music is by David Siegel.